That's right, it's me. How's everybody doing? Welcome back to the Turnbuckle. Welcome to another riveting installment, you know. So, what do we got on the docket today? We've got a lot of things. We're obviously going to do some recaps. We're going to talk about some news, and the facts have changed. So now it's not WWE facts anymore. Now it's like specific wrestler facts. So that's what we're going to start doing. So, without further ado, we're just going to jump straight into it with the news. I hit the thing three times. I didn't mean to do that. All right, now we're over here. So, first things first. We've got the whole Kairi Sane situation where she was on the Raw card and now she's off the Raw card. I thought it was for her. I thought it was because, like, they almost, like, they accidentally spoiled, like, her coming back, but now I'm assuming it's because she's leaving because of what I'm reading. So, on Friday Night SmackDown broadcast, WWE announced a champion versus champion match featuring Asuka versus Bayley for the Monday's Raw broadcast. In the graphic, WWE originally tweeted out Kairi Sane was shown standing behind Asuka while Sasha Banks was shown standing behind Bayley. In an update on that, WWE since removed Sane from the advertising. That is an indication that she didn't work the most recent Raw TV taping. So they're saying it's because she didn't work the most recent taping. I heard it was because, now I'm not going to say it was from a reliable source because that's not really true. I got it from Reddit. Well, which is kind of a reliable, anyway. But yeah, I heard it was because she was supposed to be making a return or something and they didn't want to spoil it outright by just showing it on SmackDown. So they just immediately took her off, I guess. But I don't know. I guess we'll see. At the time of recording, Monday Night Raw comes on tonight, so we'll see. It was reported last week here on EWN. EWN is E-Wrestling News, for those wondering, that Sane is said to have a complicated status with WWE right now. There were plans for her to return to Japan as an ambassador before the pandemic hit. According to the Wrestling Observer newsletter, Sane will indeed be returning to Japan to be with her husband, and WWE has known about this since at least May. Sane has been cleared to return to WWE TV and was scheduled for the July 3rd tapings, airing on July 6th and or the 13th. She was scheduled. She had been out of action after Nia Jax threw her into the ring steps during a match on May 26th. WWE wound up stopping the match, and then heavily edited it beforehand, before it aired. Prior to the injury, WWE's original plan had been to write Sane off TV with what they would have called a career-ending injury. It should be noted that Jax was not said to be the person who took her out. It likely would have been Charlotte Flair or Shayna Baszler. As far as Shayna Baszler is concerned, she has been off WWE TV as Vince McMahon has soured on her. Yeah, that part I don't really get entirely. I don't know what it is with Vince McMahon and, like, just having literal fucking gold in the palm of his hands and going, eh, I don't feel like it. I don't know, man. I don't know. It's literally money. You can print money. If you just, you have, like, so many avenues to make so much money. You can do so many things. And, like, for you, this is, like, you're just like, oh, well, I don't want to. I just don't want to. I deliberately want to do it a certain way. I want to do it my way. All right, but your way is, like, literally 50 years old. You're, like, 100 years old. And this whole company is like 800 years old. Like, something has to change at some point, man. You can't keep doing the same formula and just expecting it to work. You also can't just plug your fucking ears whenever the fans start saying they want something new. You can't do that. What do you mean he soured on her? Why? Because she was good? Because the fans liked her? What do you mean? She literally fucking went on a tear in NXT. And she could have easily went on a tear in, I'm going to continue reading. Charlotte Flair will be out for several months with an elective surgery. Once Sane returns to Japan, the belief is that she'll rest on another year and then retire. That's so weird. I mean, it's not weird. I guess it's not weird because, like, they've known about it and this is a whole thing. You know what I mean? This is a whole thing before we even found out about it. But for Kairi to just sort of be like, all right, bye. Yeah, I don't want to anymore. I'm out. I'm just going to be an ambassador. See y'all later. I don't know. It just feels like, I don't want to say anything because that's just mean. Because Kairi's allowed to do whatever the fuck she wants. I don't care if she's leaving. She can fucking do whatever she wants. She's a grown woman. It's just, I don't know. Does it feel like, I don't know. To me, it feels like it just got dropped on us. Complicated status. Plans for her to return to Japan as an ambassador before the pandemic hit. And it's from the Observer newsletter, so I mean, It can't be fake. She's been cleared, and she was scheduled. So, hold on a second. So, yeah, it's the tweets. She was scheduled. They said she was. So, I guess that means she isn't scheduled. Why? We'll find out, I guess. We'll find out. Listen, I don't know. I had it in my head that she was just going to make a comeback and do something else. But now that I'm reading this, I literally have no idea. So, I don't know. We'll have to see. I don't know. Next on the list, I have to open this up. Oh, I almost dropped my phone. Shit, hold on. God damn it, hold on. It's all gone wrong. I'm a terrible podcaster. Okay. Cody Rhodes reacts to WWE Cody Rhodes trademark situation. Now, can I... I'm just going to do something for a quick second, because I really need to figure this situation out. Try to... Oh. Why am I even... Never mind. Hold on, because I'm very... I need to figure something out here. And I'm trying to go in a different tab, but I couldn't, because I forgot that I was in incognito. And for those of you asking, yes, I was watching porn. No, I'm kidding. I was actually looking up, how to spell the word DeLorean. Listen, anything stupid that I'm too afraid to look up on regular Google, I go in incognito. If it's a stupid question, I go on incognito. Cody Garrett Runnels. Oh. Okay. Huh. All right. Well, never mind then. That literally changes every single thing that I was going to say. Because my first thought was going to be like, well, how the fuck do you take someone's actual name? It's not his actual name. His name's Cody Runnels. Huh. Okay. In an update earlier this week, AEW Executive Vice President Cody Rhodes' attempt to trademark the name Cody Rhodes was initially refused by the United States President Patent and Trademark Office due to WWE's filing for the same trademark being similar. WWE's original registration was set to expire on April 13th, then was renewed on May 15th, citing COVID-19 as the reason for the delay. Cody filed for the trademark the day it expired. Earlier today, Cody commented about trademarking the name, noting it's just business and there's no grudge. Whenever they do that, it makes me feel like they're going to use it at some point. So now it makes me think that they're going to use some guy named Cody Rhodes, but you can't do that. Is he changing? Because he could just call himself Cody. He doesn't have to call himself Rhodes. He could just call himself Cody. You can't fucking trademark the name Cody. That's just stupid. Or he could just use his real name. I don't know. I mean, I doubt there's any skin off of his nose, to be fairly honest. I don't really know where they're trademarking it, though. But that would imply that you're going to use it, right? You wouldn't renew the trademark if you weren't planning on doing anything with it, so what are you taking his name for? Did they speculate? It's not a slouch of scandals reported. It's just business. Cody retained his aid, whatever. Trying to license me is flattering, but it doesn't stop this train from moving. But, okay, me... But it's not... Well, it is you, really. It is you, if we're going to be honest here. But, like... But it's not you, but, like, it is... But, oh, Jesus Christ. Sorry, I'm in my bed right now, and I saw lightning fucking almost kill me. It was horrifying. Anyway. I don't know. Look. My brain just can't... My only thought is that they're going to use it. They're going to use... Can you hear that? Ladies and gentlemen, this might be the last podcast I ever do. God himself is going to destroy me. He's found out that I'm spouting wrong news. I'm spouting fake news about the WWE. It's Cody. Cody Rhodes. He's riding a cloud right now. He's throwing lightning down at my house. I'm going to die. Someone do something, please. Anyway. Zeus Rhodes. That's not funny. Cody Rhodes filed a trademark application for the name Cody Rhodes in April. WWE let it expire. Unfortunately for Cody, the WWE went to file a late renewal on May 15th for the Cody trademark. Said that issues surrounding the pandemic had delayed them. Yeah. So, I don't know. We'll see. It all really depends on what's going to happen. But I don't know why they filed it. I just can't understand it. I must be missing some sort of business-related move here, right? I'm not a businessman, so I must be missing some sort of clear underlying motive. Or maybe it is confusing as to why they trademarked it. Because you don't trademark anything unless you're going to use it for your company. Or you're going to use it as a name for a brand or some sort of product that you're trying to sell, yes? That's the reason why you trademark things. That's what you put the trademark on there for. You're not just gonna waste money putting a trademark on a name that you're not gonna use, that you're not gonna put on anybody, right? You wouldn't spend the time and the money to do that. You would just leave it alone. You would just let it expire. Who cares? What does it matter? So you're renewing it for a reason. But I don't know why, because he's Cody Rhodes. You can't just take someone else and call them Cody Rhodes. That's like bringing someone else and calling them The Rock. You can't do that. Who the fuck was this fucking guy? It's the same thing that they tried to... Who was it? Was it WWE? Or was it WCW? I think it was WWE. Where they did. They fucking did that before. They fucking did it with the fucking, what are they called? The Outsiders. Kevin Nash and Scott Hall. Kevin Nash was Kane. And Scott Hall, I forget who he was. He was somebody else. But yeah, Razor Ramon and Diesel. My bad, jeez. But they did do that, and it didn't work, because people instantly were like, well, these clearly aren't them. These clearly aren't them. It's not going to work. So, I don't understand. It doesn't make sense. What are they doing this for? He's going to fucking bring some other... I hope he's black. That'd be so fucking funny. No, it won't. Anyway. Now, wait just a minute. Cody, you look a little... That's not funny. It's a joke. I have to specify it was a joke. Anyway. Yeah, I don't know. Maybe I have no idea what I'm talking about. Maybe I'm not a businessman. I know I'm not a businessman. Anyway, who knows? Next on the topic, though, I want to talk about when John Cena was saying he didn't want WWE to sign AJ Styles and other TNA stars. So, AJ Styles debuted in WWE... Wow, okay. That fucking first paragraph set me off. So, during the Arn podcast, Arn Anderson talked about the debut of AJ Styles and whether or not he was surprised to see him get signed. He also named a few others he wanted WWE to sign at the time. Arn Anderson also talked about how John Cena, who he was agent to for over a decade, wasn't too keen on them signing Styles and others from TNA, because he believed NXT was the place where they made new stars rather than signing other veterans from other companies. Yep, you're right, John. Because it's not like there's never been a time in WWE where Mr. McMahon has brought up an NXT star and the fans have been frothing at the mouth for them to get the push they've always wanted them to want. No one wanted Sami Zayn. Nobody wanted Shinsuke Nakamura. Nobody wanted Bobby Roode to win the main title. Nope, not at all. Nobody wanted that. Nobody wanted a dream match between main roster members and NXT members. Mm-mm. Nope, nobody wanted that at all. Nobody wanted that at all. Everybody wanted all the NXT stars to come up and get fucking destroyed by all the higher-ups. I can assure you, ladies and gentlemen, I can assure you every single wrestling fan wanted the fucking War Raiders to be called the Viking Experience. I can assure you that everybody was fucking cramming. Everybody was cramming in their votes for that fucking 10 out of 10 name. And I'm sure everybody was just fantastic to know when the tag titles were just fucking flopping back and forth between the tag team, man. I'm sure that's what they wanted. I can assure you, man, that match with Bobby Roode and Drew McIntyre and the fucking match where Adam Cole debuted and everything, I'm sure. The match where Shinsuke got sent off, the match where fucking Zayn got sent off, you know what I'm saying? When Neville got brought up from NXT, I'm sure they were all thinking to themselves, oh, great, I can't fucking wait for them to have absolutely nothing done to them. I can't wait for Sami Zayn, one of the most well-known indie wrestlers, one of the top performers in the WWE, I can't wait for him to get in a fucking feud with Bobby Lashley and his three sisters. I can't wait. That's going to be... I can't wait for Sami Zayn to get completely fucking butt-fucked by Bobby Lashley in a dog shit feud that didn't help him. That's going to be great. Oh, my God, man. Like, I don't understand it. I just don't get... That's all we've been waiting for. Because Mr. McMahon knows exactly what he wants. Mr. McMahon knows exactly what the fans want. That's what he's been doing for years, right? That's what he's been doing the whole time. You know, the whole Daniel Bryan thing? No. Ignore the fact that it took the fans literally screaming Daniel Bryan's name for months on end. For Mr. McMahon to go, okay, fine. Fine. You want that? Here. There. Happy now. Jesus Christ. We literally have to force Mr. McMahon to push a fucking wrestler in this day and age. Look what happened to Ricochet. Holy fuck, man. I mean, Jesus Christ. It's gotten to the point where the NXT stars don't even want to be in the main roster anymore. They don't even want to go up to the main roster. They want to stay where they're at. Because it's more fucking prosperous. Is that the word I'm using? Am I using that correctly? It's better for them. Jesus Christ. Even NXT was a place where they made stars rather than signing older veterans from other companies. No, I wasn't surprised they signed him. They signed AJ. I was pleasantly surprised, and I pushed for AJ, Anderson said. It was at a point when TNA was doing well. I would watch their sitting with Cena one afternoon, and I said it would really beef up the company if they went on and stole Bobby Roode, AJ Styles, and the Cowboy James Storm. Yep, they did great with Bobby Roode. They didn't change his name. They didn't try to give him a gimmick with his fucking mustache or anything. No. They just fucking... Chad Gable, by the way, another NXT star. Yeah, that's right. Chad Gable, not Shorty fucking G. Chad Gable. Remember him? Remember his fucking tie? Remember the fucking tear he went on with Jason Jordan? Remember what they did to Jason Jordan? Yeah, man. Mr. McMahon to WWE. They love their wrestlers. They love him so much. They just care for them so much. Fucking hell. If you aren't 7 feet tall and literally made of muscle and anger, Mr. McMahon fucking hates you. Good Lord. God forbid you're below 6'2". Fucking hell. God forbid you can't lift more than, I don't know, 300 pounds. If you can't lift your own body weight, then you might as well just fuck off. Holy shit, Mr. McMahon. You are so fucking brain dead. If you bought these three guys in, it would give you a whole plethora of new opponents. I'm sure it would. It would give a lot of guys new opponents. Yep. Oh, man. That'd be great. Can you imagine the rivalries? John looked at me and said, we've got NXT. We make our own stars. Yep. Fantastic. Look at how many stars we have. Look at how many stars we're pushing right now. And how many should be stars are just kind of fucking... Where's Alistair? Hello? I was about to say, where's Lars? We don't talk about him. One of the stars Anderson mentioned who didn't spend time on WWE's main roster was James Storm. Good. Storm appeared on two separate shows of NXT in late 2015. The first where he defeated Danny Burch and the second where he defeated Adam Rose. Storm decided not to sign with the company and opted to resign with TNA. Good. Anderson, who talked about how Storm never appeared on the main roster in WWE and why he thinks any company could benefit from having him on the roster. I don't know if it was his choice, the meeting didn't go the way he wanted it to go, or if the money wasn't right. You never know in these situations, Anderson said. Any company would benefit from having a veteran like that on their crew. I'd like to say James Storm walked in and was like, you know what? I'll try it out. And some fucking intern, like, kicked the fucking supply closet door open. He's all disheveled. He's got, like, one... He like, managed to free himself from the fucking handcuffs and the fucking sock gag they gave him. And he's like, you gotta get the fuck out of here, man. This place is fucking crazy. They don't care about a single person in this... Oh, my fucking God, you gotta run. Run! Turn around! Run as fast as you can! James, fuck, okay, Jesus Christ, I'm out of here, you know? Some fucking lucky soul managed to crawl his way out of the fucking cesspool that is WWE and just fucking hurled as many warning shots as he possibly... Get out of here! Run! Don't look back! Run away! You know? Fucking, that's probably what happened. And James was like... James did that thing where he's like confused and scared, but he kept like double-taking, but like as he was doing so, he was like running away. He's like, okay, Jesus. if you use any of the codes... never mind. Anybody, any kind of benefit. If it's a guy that can get over one day, one day, one give you a main event match, you don't have to groom that guy. You don't have to teach him. But see, here's the thing, Mr. Big, you know what, man? I don't even care. I clearly don't care. Listen to how much I don't give a shit. Wow. Listen to how much I don't care. All right, so you have to do, like, two things. You have to open up the app, and then you have to get the link again so that the app is like, oh, you wanted to go there. Okay, here you go. All right, so, Monday Night Raw. Oh, shit, we have to go to that. Sorry, that was the news. Sorry, the flow was a bit too much. Okay, so that was the news, boys. All right, so now we're going to go into the Raw recap, then we're going to go into the NXT recap, and then we're going to, you know, we're going to continue on. So sit tight, I'll be right back. Hello, it's me again. Did you forget? Anyway, what? Time for the Raw recap. Here we go. I'm not going to take as long on this one. I'm going to try not to. All right. Drew McIntyre agreed to a match. No, you know. Here we go. So, The show started in the middle of a brawl as Bray Lee and Sasha Banks beat down Asuka. Dolph Ziggler arrived to introduce Drew McIntyre, calling him ungrateful. The two-man trade of rubber shots before signing their contracts for WWE Extreme Rules. McIntyre allowed Ziggler to choose a stipulation for the match. The Empress of Tomorrow interrupted the show off to sign her contract. The brawl continued once the Boss signed her name on the dotted line. It was the contract signing. I don't fully remember it. I'm not even going to lie to you. So Drew and Dolph talked for a little bit, then they signed. Asuka shouted at Sasha, and Sasha stamped it. Sasha fucking stamped her name. And then I think Asuka and Sasha started fighting, and then Drew tried to get in, like, a little cheap fight, and then, like, Dolph tried to get in a cheap little, like, jab, and Drew caught him, and he got out and then ran, I'm assuming, that is what happened, because I remember her pulling out the stamp, go boof, like that, and then fucking pulling it off, and then they laughed, yeah, so, Big Show calls out Randy Orton, the Viking Raiders, Angel Garza, and Andrade. The cameras caught Angel Garza, alongside Zelina Vega, and Andrade failing to seduce referee Jessica Carr for their match with the Viking Raiders. Charlie Caruso questioned the group strategy before Big Show interrupted and demanded he take their spot next to call out Randy Orton. Hey, listen, I know you're on next, but can you just hold that time slot for maybe 5 minutes? I gotta go shit talk my friend. Hold on. Johnny Garza got involved in Show's segment. Oh, yeah, I remember this. Because they came out and they started talking to him. And they called him a legend, too. Yeah, so Andrade and Garza got involved in Show segments, starting to surround him. Yeah, Ric Flair encouraged them to do this. Oh, yeah, and Ric Flair actually cut a pretty decent promo, too. Ric Flair encouraged them to do some damage to the world's largest athlete while telling Show that the Viper was staying in the back for now. The Viking Raiders ran down to make the save. Vega's team continued to argue repeatedly. El Idolo almost walked out on the Most Beautiful Man, but their manager convinced them to keep fighting together. Their teamwork improved as Ivar was taken out of the match. Andrade hit a back elbow on Eric to set up the wing clipper by Garza for the win. So it's putting them over. Good. Listen, man, I don't really care. The Viking Raiders, they're kind of in, like, a whole little, like, kid segment right now. I'm not going to complain. If it's a kid segment, who fucking cares? Like, if it's for the kids, come on. Like, I'm not going to fucking, like, whatever. You know what I mean? Like, you gotta appeal to the children. Leave them alone. Like, they've got ninjas running around and everything. Like, obviously, it's ridiculous. That's kind of the point, you know? So I'm not really going to fucking complain too much about that. But they're doing okay. Zelina's doing good. They're still very credible wrestlers. I'm glad about that. I just, you know, they're going to get the titles at some point. I don't know when. They're building to it, I'm sure. The match is going to be phenomenal. I already know that. Because the only three fucking tag teams on that goddamn show are the best ones. So, and by the way, tag teams are the... Andrade and Angel. There we go. And the Viking Experience and the Street Profits. The New Day's on SmackDown. What's another tag team? Oh, sorry, Rudolph. Fucking sorry about that. Jesus Christ, I need to move on. I'm sorry. We have a lot to do. I'm sorry. Akira Tozawa stood with a trio of ninjas as he prepared for the arrival of R-Truth. The match did not last long before the challenger managed to convince the champion to stop for a moment. He gave Truth enough of an opportunity to roll up Tozawa for a three count. Afterward, he ducked the ninjas and ran off with the belt and back in hand. So, great. You got the belt back. Congratulations. So, now we can go on more wacky adventures. Seth Rollins requested forgiveness from Rey Mysterio for the horrible things he would do to the Master of the 619. Mysterio interrupted from a live feed at his home. He asked for Dominic's forgiveness for what he would do to the Monday Night Messiah. Dominic gave it a promise Rollins would pay. And Britt Greer came out to run off Rollins and Murphy. The Messiah questioned why the Dust Destroyer Mexican Superstar fought for Rey Mysterio. Rollins called the Master of the 619 a coward, which set off both faces. Black called Rollins evil. Ooh. Evil! Sorry. Hold on, what? Seth Rollins requested forgiveness from Rey Mysterio for the horrible things he would do to the Master of the 619. Mysterio interrupted from a live feed in his home. He asked for Dominic's forgiveness for what he would do to the Monday Night Messiah. Dominic gave it and promised Rollins would pay. Aleister Black and Humberto Carrillo came out to run off Rollins and Murphy. The Messiah questioned why the Dutch Destroyer and Mexican Superstar fought from Rey Mysterio. Rollins called the Master of 619 a coward, which set off both faces. Black called Rollins evil. The Messiah promised to end this, setting up an impromptu tag team match. Rollins thought he was walking into an easy fight, but he was not ready for the strikes of Black or the resilience of Carrillo. However, the cohesion of Murphy and Rollins was too much. Carrillo survived a powerbomb / diving knee strike combination, but he could not kick out of the stomp after Black saved Carrillo from losing an eye, but the Messiah hit the Mexican superstar with the stomp on the steel steps. Okay, that's good. So further pushing the feud, further building the match around Rey Mysterio and Seth Rollins. This is actually going pretty well. I have to say, this is actually a very good feud going on right now. Seth is playing his part really well. You know what I'm saying? The feud is managing to, it's managing to, like, keep alive, keep fresh, you know what I mean? Like, you know, there's actual, like, decent build going on, you know, and I'm looking forward to it. I'm looking forward to the big blow-off match, you know? The Iconics made fun of Ruby Riott, who was trying to get a hold of Liv Morgan. Riott challenged Peyton Royce or Billie Kay to fight her tonight. Lana found Riott before her match, telling her to start listening to Natalya. Kay helped Royce get an early advantage, and that was enough. Royce connected on a Gamangiri, setting up a spinning brainbuster for the victory. Cool. So, shout out to Royce. She's getting built. I love the Iconics. She's getting, like, built up. Anyway, Andrade and Angel Garza were scared of fighting Big Show early, and it showed in the action. The world's largest athlete threw them around with ease. The most beautiful man managed to... Wait a second. Big Show... Oh, okay, never mind. Okay, so this was the match. Why did I say it like that? Wait, I thought they already... hold on a second. I gotta come back up here. Hold on a minute. Show calls out most beautiful man, but their manager... Oh, okay. Ran down to make the save. Continued to argue repeatedly. Okay, so I guess it just turned into an impromptu tag team match between the two of them. I don't know. For now, we've got this match now. So, the most beautiful man managed to do some serious damage to the left knee of Show, only for Idolo to force his way into the match. Garza walked out on him, causing Andrade to take a choke slam and a loss to the world's largest athlete. Turmoil going on with the tag teams. Big Show still looking like a monster. So, I kind of hope they don't break up, and if they do, I hope they still stay pretty, like, solid as singles competitors. So, we'll see. Apollo Crews for MVP. Ooh. Apollo Crews versus MVP, Bobby Lashley versus Ricochet. What the fuck? Backstage, Bobby Lashley asked Montavious. It's why did I think it was Montel Montavious? That's MMP. Anyway, while he's still trying to recruit Apollo Crews, his manager just said he was done playing nice with Dynasty Champion. He just needed him to learn an important lesson. MVP continued his rant about respecting the ring until Crews interrupted. He told MVP that he did not want a manager. MVP warned that he was worse off having B as an enemy. The Almighty made sure to help MVP steal his victory. A big distraction for Lashley. Set up a big boot into a fisherman suplex for a three count. So Almighty made sure to help MVP steal a big distraction by Lashley. Set up a big boot. Okay. Afterward, Crews attacked MVP out of frustration, but Lashley locked him in a full Nelson. Ricochet and Cedric Alexander made the save. Wow, Cedric Alexander, wow. And Ricochet, wow. This set up the Almighty versus the One. So Bobby Lashley versus Ricochet? It is. So, sorry, oh my god, this match is boring. Hold on. My eyes, I have to wipe them. Okay. Sorry. There was a hair on my phone. I had to get it. This set up the Almighty versus the One and Only. Oh. Lashley dominated much of the match, but Ricochet fired back by skipping the full Nelson. A springboard moonsault nearly sealed the win, but Lashley kicked out. He caught a sidekick, turning it into a high choke slam, and then the full Nelson for a quick submission. Alexander saved Ricochet after the bell, but he was trapped in the full Nelson for his trouble. So Bobby is becoming a fucking, like, dominant force. And they're still doing the MVP and Crews are playing their roles very well. Crews is remaining the very resilient and goody two shoes baby face. And MVP is being a heel, but he's being a very smart heel, you know? So I like that. Then we have Drew McIntyre and Asuka versus Sasha Banks and Dolph Ziggler. Drew McIntyre and Asuka bonded backstage in preparation for the main event. Sasha Banks and Bayley warned Dolph Ziggler to do his job and not cost a legit boss the match. The show off. Hang on a second. Sasha Banks and Bayley. Yeah, warned Dolph Ziggler to do his job and not cost a legit boss a match. Yeah. The boss barely tagged in to save Ziggler from McIntyre's wrath. Asuka battled out of the bank statement and locked in the Asuka lock, only for Banks to turn it into a pinning combination for three. Bayley said it would celebrate with Banks and Ziggler to end the show. So, well, I doubt it's the go home show. Putting them over. So, the show off had no idea. Oh, wait. Oh, shit. I didn't even read that. The Drew McIntyre and Asuka bonded backstage in preparation for the main event. Sasha Banks and Bayley warned Dolph Ziggler to do his job and Echo's legit boss a match. Charlotte had no idea how to compete against the power of the WWE champion, so Banks had to make the save repeatedly. The boss barely tagged in to save Ziggler from McIntyre's wrath. So that's not really good, but that's kind of what we saw coming. He's not going to win, and if he does, that's going to be kind of weird because you're taking the title off of Drew a bit soon, don't you? No, he definitely retained it at Backlash. Yes? Was there any other... Oh, my God. This is boring me. Was there any other pay-per-view retained it, or was that it? I think it was just that one. Yeah, I think it was just that one. Yeah, so then they got... Then they celebrated, which is good. Yeah, so they're looking tough. They're looking tall. You know what I'm saying? That's more beneficial to them in the long run because, you know, they get a bit of a push. But at the same time, it's also like, well, does that mean they're going to win? You know what I mean? So everything is still kind of up in the air. So it's hard to tell at this point. So that is... Hold on. There we go. So that is Monday Night Raw. Now, we go to NXT. NXT actually had the Great American Bash. I was a little bit confused by this because I was like, hold on, where's NXT? But this is technically NXT. So, so for the first time in 8 years, the Great American Bash... Okay, never mind. I thought it was going to mention the fact that NXT was replaced with the Great American Bash. So, after early chaos, so the... Oh, jeez. Did I even read anything? Did I even read the fucking, like, titles and whatnot? I don't even think I did. Just in case, hold on. I don't even think I did, but just in case I didn't. So, we started out... No, yeah, we started out with the contract signing between Drew McIntyre versus Dolph Ziggler and Asuka versus Sasha Banks, right? Then Big Show called out Randy Orton, and then the Viking Raiders fought Angel Garza and Andrade. Well, I mean, that was pretty much... It's pretty self-explanatory, isn't it? What I'm talking about. And then the 24... Yeah, then R-Truth. Yeah, okay, never mind. It's pretty self-explanatory when I start reading out what's happening. So, never mind. Okay. So, yeah, Now we're doing Great American Bash NXT. So it's a fatal four-way elimination with Mia Yim, Tegan Nox, Candice LeRae, and Dakota Kai. After early chaos, Candice LeRae took a back elbow from Tegan Nox into a corner big boot from Dakota Kai. With the poison pixie dazed, Mia Yim put away her rival with a protect yo neck for the first elimination. So Mia Yim eliminated Candice LeRae first. Then Kai found herself outnumbered against a pair of enemies. The captain of Team Kick barely kicked out of a pinfall with Nox and Yim stacked on top of her. After a miscommunication where Nox was hit by a soul food, Kai snuck in with an O'Connor roll on the HBIC for three. So Mia Yim got eliminated. With Raquel Gonzalez banned from ringside, Nox finally got her revenge. She survived the captain of Team Kick's best shots and then hit the Molly go around into the Chinese Wizard for the win. So, Tegan Nox defeated Mia Yim and Candice LeRae to become the new number one contender of the NXT Women's Championship. So, now it's going to be Tegan Nox. Hold on, I'm stretching my leg. It's going to be Tegan Nox versus Rhea Ripley for the NXT Women's Championship. I'm looking forward to that. I know Tegan Nox. I don't follow NXT as closely. Ah, my jaw. As closely as I feel like I should, which is kind of my own fault. I should definitely start, reading up on that a lot more, but I know Tegan Nox is a phenomenal wrestler, and I know that Rhea Ripley is a phenomenal wrestler, and I know that this match is going to be fairly decent. This match is going to be good. This match is going to be really good, and I'm curious as to where they're going to go. They're probably going to take the title off of Rhea. I feel like now Rhea retaining it. What the hell happened to the page? It crashed. Awesome. I love Bleacher Report. Shouts out to them. Jeez Louise. Let me try that. No, that's Monday. We don't want to do that. Professional. Anyway, I hope I'm not covering the mic. So, what else? So, Mia... No, it's not Mia Yim. It's, so... Tegan Nox versus Rhea Ripley. I'm looking forward to that. I'm curious to see who's going to come out on top. So, next we have Oney Logan versus Timothy Thatcher. Timothy. Backstage, Damian Priest called out Cameron Grimes to fight him like a man and stop playing tricks. Oney Lorcan went in a match with Timothy Thatcher. Stop saying Timothy! Timothy Thatcher! And he got exactly what he wanted. The bout got physical on the mat. The two men grappled in a classic catch-as-catch-can style as Thatcher wore down the left arm of Lorcan. It seemed like Lorcan was invulnerable, though. He kept getting back up from a series of technical holds. However, he ran out of energy against the vicious assault of Thatcher, who locked in the Fujiwara armbar to force a tap out. I like that he's trying to be a... he's trying to be like a fucking resilient fighter and everything. I like that. It's building his character. It's making him look a lot more tougher. And it's not really putting over Timothy, but it is putting over Timothy. But it's sort of putting them both over. Like, I like matches like that where no one necessarily loses. You know what I mean? So they both kind of walked away from that looking pretty good. So I'm happy about that. Oh yeah, I remember this one. This is the one I was looking forward to. So this is the. This was the Rhea Ripley versus Aaliyah and Robert Stone match. So ahead of the match, Karrion Kross and Scarlett promised that time was running out in an eerie video package. Robert Stone walked in confident and showed why, thanks to his surprising chemistry with Aaliyah. He managed to get in the right position for his client at many points, allowing him to wear down Rhea Ripley with focused strikes. Aaliyah locked in a crossface while Stone trapped Ripley in a Boston Crab. But the Nightmare refused to give up. The Robert Stone brand dynamic started to fall apart when Stone got in the way of Aaliyah pinning Ripley. This allowed the Australian to recover enough to fight back. She dumped Aaliyah between the legs of Stone and then locked in the prism trap on both competitors for the side-by-side submissions. So, you have to work for me as the stipulation. That shouldn't have been it. I feel as though they should have won. I don't think that they both needed to look kind of stupid. Robert can do it because he's like the wimpy manager. No offense to him, but like, you know, like he's like the Bobby Heenan. He's not supposed to wrestle. Like he's supposed to go out of his way to not wrestle. And when he does, he's supposed to be like super bad at it. But I like that they actually did have good chemistry, which again is another Bobby Heenan thing, because he's like, I'm not just going to go into this match not knowing what to do. Like, we're going to actually formulate some sort of plan here, right? Because I'm not about to get fucked up by an actual professional wrestler. I wish they'd have won, but then I wouldn't have wanted Rhea to be on their side, so that's why I wish that the stipulation was different. But anyway, now we've got the strap match, which is Roderick Strong versus Dexter Lumis. They did this strap match really well. I really like this strap match because they utilized the strap in a decent and creative way, and it was still an all-around, like, pretty fairly, like, good match. So, Roderick Strong attacked Dexter Lumis before the bell, but he lost his confidence once he was strapped to his tormentor. The Messiah of the Backbreaker tried to escape the ring, but Lumis pulled him back inside repeatedly. The two fought onto the stage, where Strong finally managed to clearly injure Lumis, who struggled to rise as the Messiah of the Backbreaker pulled him back into the ring. Strong whipped his rival with the strap repeatedly, trying to overcome his fear with trash talk. Bobby Fish tripped Lumis to set up a running knee by Strong, but he still kicked out. He ran Strong into Fish, then hit a uranagi before locking in the silence with the strap wrapped around his opponent's mouth for the tap out. Put over Dexter Lumis. Strong's not necessarily afraid of him anymore because he was in the ring with him and all that. And I liked it was a strap match, so Roger couldn't run away from him. So that was pretty good. So it didn't do anything wrong for them, so it's fine. I'd like to think it put over Dexter because he obviously won. I'm not going to say he didn't win in convincing fashion because he played his character really well and they all did a really good job. So. I'm looking forward to what else they're going to do with him. I don't know. We'll see if there's like another thing they're going to do with Roderick. Maybe he's going to go to somebody else. I don't know. It depends. We'll see though. So next we have Breezango save Drake Maverick from Santos Escobar. More Night 2 build. Hold on. Before that happens. There we go. Have a bit of H2O. Okay. What is it? Water check? Hydro check? And never mind. A video package was shown for next week's title match between Adam Cole and Keith Lee. Both men put this over as the biggest match of their careers. Yeah, it's winner take all. If Adam, I mean, they're literally the two hottest wrestlers right now. Literally the two hottest wrestlers. If either of them win, they are fucking getting skyrocketed to the top. It's over. If either one of them win, and I want both of them to win, honestly, I mean, this is going to be a great match. There's no lose-lose situation here. Like, this is going to be great. So, Hold on. A video package was shown for next week's title match between Adam Cole and Keith Lee. Both men put this over the biggest match of their careers. Candice LeRae got into a brawl with Mia Yim backstage. Isaiah Swerve Scott tried to break it up. Hold on. Isaiah Swerve Scott. Never mind. I'm thinking of Rich Swann. Why was I thinking of Rich Swann? Anyway. Tried to break it up, but Johnny Gargano pulled him away. Officials had to separate the two men. Okay, Santos Escobar explained that he, alongside Raul Mendoza and Joaquin Wilde, would change the perception of Lucha Libre. Drake Maverick interrupted and was joined by Breezango to run off the trio. Fandango challenged the three heels to a match for night two of the Great American Bash next week. Okay, Cameron Grimes was unfazed by Damian Priest's earlier comments, telling him he would lose again. The technical savage was more focused on title opportunities than the Archer of Infamy. Mercedes Martinez promised to make a mark on NXT, starting with her return to action next week. Ooh. Alright, then we have Io Shirai versus Sasha Banks. Sasha Banks and Bayley arrived in a nice car, decked out in specialty Great American Bash gear. Io Shirai walked out with her typical attire and entrance, unfazed by the spectacle. The NXT legends constantly taunted the Joshi Judas, but she refused to react. They are NXT legends, aren't they? They literally are like two of the four horsewomen. That's crazy. Battling back and forth, the two women leaned into their kicks and forearms. Shirai struggled to keep up with the legit boss, who used every strategy in her arsenal. Banks caught her best offense and powerbombed her into the plexiglass. Shirai caught Banks into a crossface on the role model, threw WWE Tag Team Championship. Shirai caught Banks in a crossface, and the role model, Bayley, threw a WWE Tag Team Championship into the ring to distract the referee. It allowed Bayley hit the Joshi Judas with a forearm, yeah. And the ensuing chaos, Oscar appeared from under the ring and caught the boss with the green mist, setting up Shirai and Moonsault for the win. I thought it was a roll-up. Oh, no, she kicked out. I think it was like a subversion. So, I'm not going to lie, I didn't watch the match, I don't know what to tell you. That's all right. Not me not watching the match. I'm talking about Io winning. That's good. It wouldn't make sense for Sasha to... Well, I would have been like, all right, yeah, I see that. I'd like that if they were just like, yeah, we're good in this division, and we're still on the top in NXT. They could have argued that. But put under one of the top NXT stars right now, it kind of doesn't seem like the best idea. So yeah, that was probably the best way to go. Did they need all that type of interference? Not really, no, but I mean, what can you do about it, you know? So then, no, that was it. Yeah, that was night one. That was night one of NXT Great American Bash. And then night two's next week. Okie dokie. So I like my favorite match had to be Dexter Lumis versus Roderick Strong. I really like that one. My first one definitely would have been Ripley versus Stone and Aaliyah, but nah. I didn't like the way that it ended, so I'm sticking with Lumis. So that's Raw, that's NXT. We're gonna go ahead and turn it over to How'd You Know, and then we're gonna hit it with AEW and SmackDown, and then we're gonna call it. So sit tight. Hello and welcome to How'd You Know, episode 3? 2? I don't know. Why would it be? I don't know. It is episode 3. What am I talking about? So, like I said in the beginning, we have the Macho Man. I can't do a good Macho Man impression, so I'm not going to. I'm not really that good at it. I can do a pretty good, like, inflection of his, and I can do, like, the pinky thing, you know what I'm saying? You know the pinky thing where he, like, points with it, and he traces across the air, you know, that sort of thing. I can do that, but, like, hold on. I'm going to make an attempt, ready? Here's the best Macho... Never mind, I'm not going to do it. So, he was originally a professional baseball player. Born Randall Poffo in Columbus, or Poffo. Poffo? Poffo. Poffo in Columbus, Ohio. Savage's father, Angelo Poffo, was a notable pro wrestler in the 1950s. Sometimes wrestling under a mask with a dollar sign. Sometimes wrestling under a mask with a dollar sign on it as the Masked Miser. If that was considered the family if that was considered the family business, Savage initially strayed from it, pursuing his love of baseball into a spot on the St. Louis Cardinals farm team as a catcher directly out of high school. Savage played nearly 300 minor league games over four seasons. After failing to make the majors, he decided to follow his father in wrestling, and the rest is history. So that was the first one. Number two, a Hawaiian wrestler inspired his famous tagline. Ooh, you know what it is. In 1967, a 15-year-old Savage accompanied his father to a wrestling event in Hawaii. There, he saw island grappler King Curtis Iaukea deliver a promo or appeal for viewers to watch him in a forthcoming match. Iaukea spoke in a whisper before bellowing, punctuating his sentence with, "Ooh, yeah." I don't think that's what he was like, but I guess he was like, "Oh, yeah." I don't know. He probably didn't say it like that. That particular speech pattern stuck with Savage, who adopted it when he began. Oh, he literally said, "Ooh, yeah." Really? Huh. Oh, that particular speech pattern. Who adopted it when he began his... So, a Hawaiian wrestler was how he got his Hawaiian voice. Is how he got his Macho Man persona. Macho Man! Let me tell you something, Hulk Hogan user! I don't know. I can't think of a fucking... He just goes on. And I can't think of a good promo. The Ultimate Warrior! Yes! The Ultimate Warrior, the guy is a real conniving son of a bitch here. I am Macho Man. I can't say because Macho Man doesn't talk in first person. He talks in third. Macho Man sees right through your tricks here. He's not. You see, it's not really that good. But like while I'm doing it, I'm doing the thing where he's like drawing a line. Because that's how you do it. You got to do the hands. That's how you get. That's, I feel, to me, that's how you really get the. That's how you sell the impression. That's how you sell the impression. Yeah. When you do the mannerisms of the wrestler and you don't actually just sit there and do the voice here, it's actually a lot better of a delivery, you know what I'm saying? It's alright. It's okay. It can be better. But, you know. His mom gave him the Macho Man nickname, which, of course she did, and that's the most wholesome thing. According to Savage, his wrestling nickname didn't come from the Village People song from an article his mother, Judy, had read in Reader's Digest announcing that Macho Man was going to be a hot term in the coming years. Okay. She mailed it to Savage along with a list of other possible names, even though neither one seemed to know what a Macho Man was. Savage, even though they didn't seem to know what it was, Savage liked it. His stage name, Savage, came from Georgia promoter Ole Anderson, who thought Savage's grappling style was ferocious. So, Macho Man Randy Savage. I thought she just called him Macho Man because, you know, it's just like a little nickname you give to your son. Oh, my little Macho Man, but no, it's... Literally, try this one. I heard it in a magazine. Go with that one. See if it makes you money. So he got his whole fucking Macho Man Randy Savage. The Macho Man! Anyway, he scared other wrestlers. So in the early 1980s, Savage's father had started promoting his own regional shows in the Lexington, Kentucky area. To draw publicity, Savage and the other wrestlers would sometimes show up to rival shows, threatening grapplers and offering up wagers that they could beat them up in a real fight. Once, a Memphis wrestler named Bill Dundee pulled a gun on Savage, who allegedly took it away from him and beat him with it. After his father's promotion closed up, Savage landed in the WWF, now WWE, giving him a national platform. So, I mean, imagine Macho Man. Who's ready to fight with the Macho Man who thinks they can step outside and go toe-to-toe with the Savage one? Yeah, I'm gonna lay you in the middle of the parking lot. I'm gonna shoot so hard with the 1-2 buckle of my shoe. Yeah, you're not gonna know when it's you. Yeah, I'm gonna go ahead and chew a little bit of an uppercut. Yeah, I also might give you a little bit of a left hook and maybe a right jab. You're not gonna see any combo of mine coming. Let me tell you something right now. Yeah, Macho Man knows exactly what he's gonna do. You know what I mean? So, I'd say the thing is though, right, is I loved old school promos. Like, they were so fucking good. And that's why I love Macho Man so much. Because his promos, man, oh boy. All that, you see, you need to go watch an Ultimate Warrior promo. Oh my lord. Anyway, Jake the Snake's, so this one I really like. Because this one I heard beforehand. So Jake the Snake's Python put him in the hospital. So for those of you who haven't heard this, this is actually a story that Jake the Snake himself told on the Joe Rogan podcast. So if you want, stop the podcast, go look that story up, and then come back. So one of Savage's recurring feuds in the WWE was with Jake the Snake Roberts. He was a link wrestler. He carried a python. His most notable thing was he carried a python into the ring. His name was Damien. I was called him Dave, but his name was Damien. Carried a python into the ring and allowed the reptile to attack his opponents. He did it to a certain amount. I think he did it to every single one. I don't think every wrestler was cool with it, though. To attack his opponents. To intensify their rivalry, Savage agreed to allow Roberts' snake to bite him on the arm during a televised taping after being assured it was devenomized. Now, I just want to say, my impression is fucking dog shit compared to Jake the Snake's Roberts' impression. So if you want to see an actual, like, good impression of Macho Man Randy Savage, again, go look up the podcast episode with Jake the Snake and Joe Rogan. I have no idea which number it was. Don't fucking ask me. He's got, like, literally 1,000 episodes. Don't look at me for that. Jake the Snake bite him on the arm. 5 days later, Savage was in the hospital with a 104-degree fever. Savage lived, but the snake didn't. It died just a few days later. He was devenomized, but maybe I wasn't, Savage told IGN in 2004. I feel like I shouldn't have put on the voice for that. Seemed a little bit insensitive. Rest in peace, Damien. May he will be missed. Even though that was like... that was literally like fucking 30 years ago, so... Oh, boy. Okay, so... How'd you know? I mean, that was fairly short, to be fair. But again, it's literally 5 facts, and I'm not about to sit here and fucking bore you all half to death. So that was it. He was a professional baseball player. A Hawaiian wrestler inspired the same tagline. His mom gave him the Macho Man nickname. He scared all the wrestlers. And Jake the Snake's python put him in the hospital. Wow, that sounds bad. Okay, Jake the Snake owned a pet snake named Damien, and the pet snake named Damien bit Macho Man Randy Savage on the arm in a match. That's a horrible title. Jake the Snake's python put... Oh, jeez, okay. I'm 24. I need to stop. I'm 24. No. Wait, technically I am. Actually, I'm 23 and 3/4. So fucking dumb. Anyway, that's how'd you know. We're going to move on with AEW, then SmackDown, then we're going to call it, boys. So we'll be right back. That's right, I'm back. So now we're doing AEW, and we're doing SmackDown. For some reason, the original link that I had for the results wasn't the right one, so I had to go back and get a different one. So, the first match we have on the card for AEW's Fighter Fest Night 1 is MJF and Wardlow versus Jurassic Express. So, MJF gave a promo before the match with his usual brand of wit. Jungle Boy started strong with a clothesline before MJF and Wardlow overpowered him to take control. The cocky MJF did a little strut to taunt Luchasaurus before bringing in Wardlow to throw Jungle Boy around like a ragdoll. When MJF came out, he cut like a pretty fucking like nice promo about how he just didn't like working for fucking Tony and how it was all just a fucking like ratings war at this point and all that nonsense, and I think he came after fucking Jungle Boy as well in his promo and stuff. I don't fully remember what he said, but I know it had a bit to do with that. The cocky MJF, never mind. Before bringing Wardlow to Jungle Boy around like a ragdoll, they even prevented a tag team from the human dinosaur by using some classic heel tactics, which I would assume is keeping him in the corner. Luchasaurus finally managed to get into the ring and took the powerhouse down with a flurry of kicks. MJF tagged out as soon as he had an opportunity. The two behemoths clashed with a few power moves that put both men on the mat. Once Jungle Boy recovered, he took out his biggest rival with a few dives out in the ring. Luchasaurus followed suit and took Wardlow out at ringside. A dive of his own. Ay, ay, ay. Marco Stunt tried to get involved, but Wardlow ended up throwing him into Jungle Boy. MJF tried to use his diamond ring as a weapon and wound up hitting Wardlow by mistake. This allowed Jurassic Express to take him out with a few moves to get the win. That's okay. MJF didn't eat the pin. I don't really think it would have hurt him all that much anyway. They tried to win by heel tactics, and they lost by trying to do the heel tactics. So it was a pretty nice win all around. Luchasaurus is a phenomenal wrestler, and any wrestler who's able to fucking maneuver himself around in the ring like that and hit Hurt Carano's like it's nobody's business is a fucking A-plus wrestler in my eyes. Next, we have Hikaru Shida versus Penelope Ford. And Penelope Ford got this match because she won the number one contenders match last week, if I remember correctly. Renee Aubrey Edwards, that's her name. Aubrey Edwards booted Kip Sabian from ringside before the match started. As soon as the bell rang, I don't even know if that's entirely true. Her Penelope Ford getting the match like this, I can't remember. I don't know if that's entirely true, so I'm going to say that it's not true because I'm too afraid of being wrong on the internet and I don't want to get yelled at. Ford tried to regain her composure, but she didn't get the upper hand until they took the fight out of the ring. She threw the champ into the barricade, but she came back and hit another running knee. The challenger dodged another knee and hit a backhand spring elbow. I don't know why I said it like that. Hold on. Ford tried to regain her composure, but she didn't get the upper hand until they took the fight out of the ring. She threw the champ into the barricade, but she came back and hit another running knee. The challenger dodged another knee and hit a backhand spring elbow, followed by a German suplex for a near fall. We returned from a break to see Ford keeping Sheeta grounded in a camel clutch. It's a pay-per-view. Why is there... Never mind. The champ broke free and applied a sleeper and a stretch submission before hitting a brutal backbreaker for another two count. She had a trademark Falcon Arrow, but Ford countered the pin perfectly. Both women almost had the win at several points. Sabian tried to interfere with a kendo stick, but Sheeta disarmed him and used it to knock his block off. Ford kicked out of a couple of finishes before Sheeta hit one more knee for the pin and the win. So she retained. Cool. Okay, hold on. I do the thing where I zone out while I'm reading! Champ broke free and applied a sleeper and stretched the mission. I remember that. And she countered it. Both women had the win at several points. Sabian tried to interfere with the kendo stick, but Sheeta disarmed him. Used a knock his block off. Ford kicked out of a couple of finishers before Sheeta. One more knee to the face. Pin for the win. I like that. I like when you see the match and it looks like it could be anybody's game, even with match interference. I like that. I'm glad she retained. Man, I'm not even going to lie to you guys right now. I don't really have much to say about this match. It was a very back and forth competitive match. I'm glad it wasn't one-sided. I'm glad the Penelope Ford actually put up a fight. So it makes her more of a credible competitor. It makes Hikaru even more of a credible competitor because they had a decent back and forth and she still managed to come out on top, even with heel tactics. So I'm happy. I'm happy about the match. It was very decent. Next, we have Cody Rhodes versus Jake Hager. Cody was at an immediate disadvantage against the bigger Hager. He quickly found himself on the mat after trying to go full speed at him. The TNT champion went for a single leg takedown but had to settle for a headlock when the big man refused to be taken down. Both men managed to counter an ankle lock submission from each other. Hager went after Arn Anderson, but Cody drove over the... Oh, sorry. He didn't put his... Never mind. He didn't put his car on. He didn't... Cody dove over the top rope to come off. Hager caught him in midair and slammed him into the mat to counter a disaster kick. This allowed him to get his hands on Anderson. The champ tried to intervene, but the MMA fighter hit a suplex on the floor. Cody hit a beautiful cutter on the top rope as he began to gain some momentum. Hager's wife, Catalina, slapped Cody, but Goldust ran down and evened the score by hitting Hager. Okay. Right, alright. This allowed the American Nightmare to get the upper hand. Hager went for a submission, but Cody countered into a pin to retain the title. Okay, I thought they were going to mention the fact that Hager got suspended because of the referee situation, which apparently is because they're trying to do like an angle with Mike Tyson, and I guess this is what I'm hearing, okay? I heard that the reason why, because he got suspended for 10 days and it was an undisclosed amount of money that he was fined, which means it's all a bit of a fabrication to make it look like he's actually getting suspended, when in reality he's just getting taken off of TV because of another angle that's happening that wouldn't look right if Jake was there. So that's why they're taking him off. That's what I'm hearing. Don't quote me, though. Don't shoot the messenger. That's the best of my knowledge. Then we have Private Party versus Santana and Ortiz. These two, man, Private Party are fucking amazing. Like, I'm hearing nothing but good things from these guys, man. Private Party is amazing. Matt Hardy accompanying Mark Queen and Isaiah Cassidy to the ring for their match. Hold on, I had to itch my eye, sorry. My eye, it itches. There we go. Matt Hardy accompanying Mark Queen and Isaiah Cassidy to the ring for the match against Santino and Ortiz. Orange Cassidy was lounging by the announce table for some reason. Cassidy and Santana kicked things off with their team. Santana gave him a free shot and left Cassidy's effort. This didn't stop Private Party from using their trademark high-flying double-team offense to take control. It didn't take long for Ortiz to ground Cassidy in a submission to slow down the pace back. After the commercial break, Private Party began to pick up some steam. After a furious exchange of double-team moves, Quan was able to score the win for his team. I like that. I like that even when Santana and Ortiz we're still on the offense and making sure that Private Party were not going to try and get the upper hand. Private Party still managed to pull through and pull out a win at the end of the day. Listen, I mean, AEW's got fucking elite style wrestlers. I don't feel like you should be surprised that these matches are fucking amazing. That all these wrestlers are, like, really, like, fucking, you know, talented people. Then we have Kenny Omega and Adam Page versus the Best Friends. Trent and Chuck Taylor showed up for their title shot in style, with Trent's mom dropping them off in a minivan like they were teenagers who couldn't drive themselves to a movie. Taylor and Omega started the match with a quick exchange of counters and takedowns. It was a textbook opening for a match. Neither man had a clear advantage. This led to Page and Trent tagging in and trading punches. FTR eventually came out to the stage with some long chairs and a cooler to watch for the final 10 minutes of the show as the Hangman and the Cleaner started to dominate. We returned to see Best Friends make a comeback. Taylor hit a big dive to take out Omega so they could isolate Page. The Hangman fought back and took out both men with a series of signature moves. Trent countered a moonsault from Omega, and Taylor followed up with a spike pile driver for a close two count. They came close again with their finisher on Page, but Omega was right there to break up the pin. The Hangman hit the buckshot Lariat for the win after a long back and forth. The show ended with FTR offering the winners a beer before getting into an argument. So, FTR looks like they're going to be the next ones to take on Kenny Omega and... what's his name? Hangman Page! Jesus Christ! That's going to be a decent match. I can't wait for that. Fucking Best Friends, greatest tag team. I love them. Chucky T is a fucking phenomenal wrestler. I love them so much. Don't quote me. Trent Beretta? I think that's his name. I don't know too much about Trent Beretta, but I do like Chucky T. I watched a couple of his matches in the indies, and he is a very talented wrestler. Obviously, Hangman and Omega are the fucking top guys right now, especially with them being, like, the fucking one of the best tag teams right now. And with FTR now on the scene, I can't wait for the barn burner they're going to put on. So it's only a matter of time before that match happens. And that was the main event. Okay. A fucking phenomenal show. Favorite match would definitely have to be the tag team main event. Because I love the minivan. I love Chucky T. This is how you fucking make... this is how you build tag teams and tag team championships and tag team rivalries. They're doing well with all their divisions. They kind of need... no, they're doing all right with the women's division now. They're rounding that out a little bit. It's getting better. Tag team's doing great. Singles is doing great. They're rounding out. AEW is actually shaping up to be a very, very well, like, well-rounded out show. You know? So, again, I'm looking forward to night two. That definitely seems like it's going to be really fun. So, now... ladies and gentlemen, for the moment you've all been waiting for, even though it's literally just SmackDown, now we're going to do the SmackDown recap, boys. Here we go. Ready? Hold on, I got it. There we go. Okay. So, that's not it. Hold on, I have to fucking, now I got to come in here, then I got to, boom. Okay. Now, was that someone's nipple? No. It's the fucking Intercontinental title. Fucking hell. Michael Cole interviews Matt Riddle. So, Michael Cole introduced the WWE... so, yeah, this is the beginning, right? So, Michael Cole introduced the WWE Universe to Matt Riddle, referring to him as the original King of Bros. Corey Graves threw to a recap of Riddle's debut on SmackDown, including his non-title victory over Intercontinental Champion AJ Styles. Riddle joked that he likes Styles more than Styles likes him. Cole asked about the flip-flops, and Riddle told the convoluted story about frostbite and not being able to feel his feet. It was like, he fucking, oh my god, I can't fully remember. But like, he walked out in the snow or something. He walked out in the cold. He didn't have any shoes on. His toes almost got amputated. And then it just, I guess it made his feet really tough. So he didn't really need, no, it was, he can't wear shoes. If you put shoes on, his feet start hurting. So he can't wear shoes. It was something along like that. King Corbin interrupted. Yeah, so now he refuses to wear shoes or something like that. Cool, he doesn't give a shit. I mean, look, if it's his story, it's his story. I don't know what to tell you. That's literally what it is. King Corbin interrupted the proceedings to a chorus of boos, unamused by the brawl. Corbin said no one likes Riddle and no one wants him there, so he's going to make sure the newcomer pays for it. King said Riddle needs to be ready for a match at any time, then needs someone to slap him around. He introduced John Morrison, who, alongside The Miz, made his way to the ring for the nice opening bow. Riddle, oh no. Now we have Matt Riddle versus John Morrison. Morrison caught Riddle with a hellish open hand chop to the chest that stunned the babyface and allowed the former Intercontinental Tag Team and ECW Champion to ground his opponent. A corkscrew plancha earned Morrison a strong near fall. Yeah, this dude fucking some Matt's on hands and knees on the ring, right? Fucking I almost called him Corbin. Morrison cartwheels over this fucker, grabs him, deadlifts him up mid corkscrew. picks him up and then just fucking ends him on the fucking mat with a power. Or what was it? Corkscrew plancha. Oh, yeah. He picks him up, right? Fucking Corkscrew picks him up, has him on the shoulder, fucking spins this piece of shit around and fucking slams his ass on the mat. That shit was wild. Holy moly, man. Corbin. Oh, I don't keep saying that. Morrison's insane, man. That dude didn't age a fucking day when he left, bro. That shit is crazy. Anyway, a running knee continued Morrison's dominance, but a two count resulted in obvious frustration on the part of the veteran heel. We know he can't take a beating. Congratulations. And unimpressed King Corbin. Oh, we know he can take a beating. Congratulations. An unimpressed King Corbin said on commentary in reference to his newfound rival Riddle. A fisherman buster allowed the original bro to create separation. He infuriated Corbin, blasting him with a flip-flop. Oh, yeah. He threw the flip-flop at him. And now everybody screen-capped the moment where Corey's looking at the flip-flop like it's a fucking, like, Asian giant hornet. Back from the timeout, Riddle dropped Morrison. Hold on, he infuriated Corbin, blasting him with a flip-flop heading into the break. Yeah, back from the timeout, Riddle dropped Morrison with Bro to sleep, followed by a German suplex for a two. The floating bro was met with Morrison's knees to the back. A helicopter's razor's edge by Morrison. Yeah, this dude fucking. Oh my god, I forget what he did. Like how he got him into that position. That was another thing, too. A helicopter razor's edge by Mor... No, I think that was the one that he... No, not that one. He didn't corkscrew him and then twist him around. I think the razor's edge was the one I'm thinking of. I put the two moves together, my bad. Morrison fought out and delivered a middle rope Spanish fly for a near fall as the commentary team touted Riddle's resiliency. A distraction by Corbin nearly caused Riddle, but the bro cut Morrison with a roll-up for the win as the victor made his way up the ramp. AJ Styles attack from behind, only for Drew Gulak to make the save, heading for another timeout. Ow, I hit my foot on my wall. Next, we have Intercontinental Championship match. Drew Gulak versus AJ Styles. You already know where this is going. An aggressive, focused Intercontinental Champion AJ Styles wore Drew Gulak out early with a series of strikes and face rakes. He withstood a victory roll attempt. I can't see. He withstood a victory roll attempt and continued to punish the challenger. Twisting Gulak's knee around the bottom rope, Styles stomped on it, looking to take the base away from his opponent. It's in a nice touch. Daniel Bryan joined the show via Zoom to discuss Coach Gulak's performance. He's a coach? But I thought Bryan was coaching him. I guess to coach Gulak's performance? I don't know. Styles fended off a comeback attempt heading into the break. A wicked brainbuster. Hold on, I know this is just... A wicked brainbuster put Gulak down for two. Despite Bryan insisting Gulak was the one superstar on the roster more technically sound than him, Styles continued to dominate the one-sided match. That is, until the challenger dumped Styles face first into the top turnbuckle and fired off a series of drop kicks that stunned the champ. A Michinoku driver followed as Gulak earned his first near fall of the bout. Shaking off the onslaught of his opponent, the Phenomenal One delivered a stylish clutch but refused to follow up with the pinfall. Looking to make a statement, finished Gulak with an emphatic Phenomenal Forearm for the definitive victory. Now, I like that. Styles kind of put a little bit of a bow on top of it just to be like, hey, fuck you, all right? I'm still the champion, which I like. I like that. That's very effective for the champion. I'm sorry that had to happen to Drew. I was a bit upset to see that, to see Styles sort of put Drew away like that, but at the same time, it's like, well, it's more so like, all right, he's healing it up, you know? He's also the champ, so you obviously want him to look dominant, so, you know, I'm not really going to complain too much about that. Then we had Alexa Bliss and Nikki Cross interrupting Bayley and Sasha Banks. This was a weird segment. I'm not gonna lie, this was a bit weird. I mean, they have every right to fucking come out here and just talk shit, because they're literally both, they're the tag champs, and she's the fucking women's champion. SmackDown women's champion, so, like, fair, but, like, eh. Women's tag team champion Bayley and Sasha Banks made their way to the ring and wasted little time touting their presence across all brands and their recent success heading into Extreme Rules. Bayley took it a step further, claiming The Undertaker reached out to them and praised them for their effects of late. She went as far as to claim he thought WWE should have a tribute for them. She threw to the video as the crowd heavily booed the champions. Alexa Bliss and Nikki Cross interrupted the exercise in vanity, much to the delight of Michael Cole. Much to the delight of Michael Cole on commentary. Cross claimed that if she puts her heart into it, she knows she can win the SmackDown Women's Championship at Extreme Rules. And then they started laughing at her, and then Cross slapped Bayley, and then Banks accepted a match on her partner's behalf, setting up Bayley versus Bliss. Then, you know, Bliss versus Bayley. So, Alexa Bliss sought to ruin the 266th day of Bayley's SmackDown Women's Championship reign, taking the fight to her coming out of the break. She succeeded early, but barely seized control, wearing Bliss down and reminding everyone why she had been champion for such a long period of time. A hard right hand by Bliss allowed her to create some separation, but Bayley cut her off, slamming her arm into the ring apron. Sasha Banks interfered as the official was distracted by Nikki Cross, and the match descended in chaos. Cross at the ring, cleaning it of the heels and leaving Bayley and Banks to clutch the goal, realizing that Scott poses a very real threat to the former title reign. Don't do that! Don't be like, oh, she might actually get it. That would be nice, to be honest. Because it's not like they're really going to lose too much. They still have the tag title, so they're still in it. And I don't know. I don't know. Who would be her rival? Like, I don't know. It'd be great. It would. Don't get me wrong. But, like, I'm afraid that, like, WWE just wouldn't use her properly, you know? Like, I feel like they would have something and they'd just be, they'd fumble with it. You know what I mean? So, like, I don't know. I don't know. I don't think she's going to win. I don't know. I don't see it happening. But you really got to be careful with these types of title reigns, man. You got to be careful with how long you keep it on them. If you don't have a long-term plan for who's going to take it off of them, you really got to be careful for who you give it to and who you take it off, you know? So, I don't know. I mean, now thinking about this, no. Because I was going to say, no, thinking about this, they could just give it to Bayley and then do the whole Sasha turning on Bayley thing. And then that happen, and then that be the match. Or they do the thing where Nikki takes it off of Bayley and Sasha challenges for it. And then Sasha gets it. And then Sasha and Bayley have a thing, which to me would be better because it's more a long-term booking, to be fair, which means more seed planting. Now, that sounds like a good idea, but this is the WWE, so that's a pipe dream. Then we have Kofi Kingston versus Shinsuke Nakamura. As the rivalry between the New Day and Cesaro and Shinsuke Nakamura continues, former WWE champion Kofi Kingston battled Shinsuke Nakamura in singles competition. Why am I so tired? The aforementioned Cesaro and Big E watch their respective partners back at ringside. Not wasting any time, Kingston attacks his opponent from the opening bell, negating Nakamura's striking ability in the process. As Big E and Cesaro made their presences felt, referee Jessica Carr sent them packing and ensuing the better man would emerge from their match victoriously. Nakamura controlled coming out of the break, Kingston fought out from underneath, elbowing out of a sleeper and delivering a dropkick to down the artist. Kingston whiffed on Trouble in Paradise, and Nakamura answered with a kick of his own for a near fall. The SOS by Kingston for a count of two. A double stump by Kingston earned him another two count. Nakamura recovered and delivered the Kinshasa for the hard-fought victory as both him and Cesaro continued their sudden winning ways. Okay. All right. That's good. Two people who definitely deserve a push in the WWE are getting a push right now. I don't know where this is going. They might get pushed off a fucking cliff. This is the WWE we're talking about. So I don't know where they're going. I'm just hoping that wherever they go, it's more prosperous for them, okay? That's great. Sure. I mean, that's a message. I like wins like this, where you're like, ooh, where's this going? You know what I mean? I'm looking forward to this. I'm a bit scared, but I'm still looking forward to it. So, I mean, at this point, only time will tell. You know what I mean? Only time will tell what happens. I don't know. I hope nothing bad. Then Sheamus did a toast to Jeff Hardy. Look at this fucking guy. Lord have mercy. Jeff Hardy hit the ring, which was filled with a portable bar for the night's main event promo segment. Sheamus was nowhere to be found, instead appearing via satellite from his home. The Celtic Warrior spent yet another week taunting and humiliating Hardy by bringing up his past addictions, all while Hardy asked what the purpose of this toast was. Just when Sheamus thought he had encouraged Hardy to revert to his old ways, Jeff broke a champagne glass over the Irishman's personal bartender, Jeeves, and delivered a swanton bomb to close out the show on Jeeves. Why? This doesn't help Sheamus. This doesn't help Hardy. We get it. He was an alcoholic. And he was a substance abuser. We get it. He did drugs. Have you heard of the WWF in the 80s? Do I need to introduce you to Jake Roberts and the Ultimate Warrior and fucking half the other people in that fucking locker room? Do I need to introduce you to fucking LOD? That's not really nice. I'm just saying, man. You're acting like all the other fucking roster members. You're acting like Roman Reigns and the Usos didn't have shit like this happen to them. They get a couple of jabs every now and again, but it's never on this level, man. We get it, all right? Jeff did drugs, and he sipped a bit of the devil's liquid now every now and again. I understand that's what it's called. Who cares? Can we move on, please? Jesus Christ. Can we move on to Jeff actually being a credible fucking wrestler? And can we fucking get Sheamus out of this dog shit rivalry, please? What is happening? I don't understand. This isn't doing anything for anybody. They're just bringing up the past again for no reason. It's not helping. I'm waiting for this to be over. Okay? This is stupid. This is the fucking... What was it? This is the Big Cass Daniel Bryan rivalry thing. No one cares. This isn't helping anyone. It's stupid. Alright? You're just dwindling these guys' fucking... like, superstar status. Lord have mercy. You can't really do that much to Jeff because he's already a fucking legend. And Sheamus is pretty much a legend in his own right, if we're being fairly honest. I mean, the dude really went on a bit of a tirade when he showed up. But like, aye, man. That's all I have to say about that. So that's SmackDown. Favorite match? Shinsuke Nakamura and Kofi Kingston. I'm looking forward to seeing what they're going to do. Aye, I'm just waiting for that to end. Alright, boys. Anyway, that's going to do it. That's going to do it for this week's episode. Hopefully you all enjoyed it. Hopefully you guys have a wonderful week. I'll catch you guys in the next one. This has been The Turnbuckle. And as always, I've been your host, Ed Boy. And I will catch you guys later. That was a weird outro.